Hey folks, Eric here. Before we get this episode started, I just wanted to let you know of a couple ways you can help the show out. Follow us on Twitter at @TrekAboutShow, like us on Facebook by searching for Trek About on Facebook, and the best way to help the show out would be to review us on iTunes. Now let's get this show started.
So this was a really weird week in a lot of ways.
How so?
Well, I mean, the first one felt very much like your typical original series episode, like it felt like an earlier one. And the second one leaves me with a lot of troubling questions.
Let's take the first one first and the second one second.
Well, that's a very logical way.
Well, since we are talking about the original series. No, I'm glad you picked up on that, because Devil's Due is based on a script outline for a phase two.
Okay.
Script, which I don't believe was ever actually written. I'm not actually sure on that, but I think that in the same way that they did The Child all the way back in the second season, if you'll remember, they took the basic concept of outline of the script and turned it into a Next Generation episode. I believe that's basically what they did with Devil's Due. And it's pretty much an original series episode.
I mean, I liked a lot of it, I will say. There were bits of it that I enjoyed, but then bits of it that made no sense or didn't really fit with the tone of the series.
Well, go into that. What didn't fit? I think I know, but
well, it's the whole. I don't know. It's it's hard to talk about this episode. I'm really not sure where to begin with it. Really.
Well, I think what we can really talk about. There's a couple different ways to get into it. I think number one, there's no B plot.
Okay,
something that the show does a lot now. Either of these episodes didn't have a B plot, which is interesting. And also, I think that in a very interesting way, you know, we talked a lot about how when Michael Piller came on board in the third season, one of his things was character, character, character. Everything has to be about characters.
Yeah.
This one isn't about characters
at all.
No,
it's all about its plot. And
which is something that the show hasn't been about in a long time. And certainly the show takes a lot of care and the plots are interesting. But the show is not about plot. And I think why it feels like an original series episode is because the original series was mostly about plot and sometimes was about character, but they were archetypes. And I think what you see in Devil's Due is this is a plot episode.
They go down to a planet. They meet up with the planet has a problem. They meet up with a weird person who turns out to be the source of the problem, and they outwit them.
Yes.
That's exact. Yeah, that is exactly a...
That's pretty much an original series episode.
Yeah, and Well, that was the beginning of Next Generation, and a lot of Next Generation episodes kind of almost start that way. They go much deeper in it. It is kind of a much more shallow episode.
Yeah, I guess you could see really, you know, a version of this episode that had been originally, you know, Next Generation-fied more, where, you know, the whole episode was really taking place in the first 15 or 20 minutes, and then there was a deeper level to it, which had something to do with one of the characters, right? And for whatever reason, they decided not to do that, or perhaps didn't do it, or, you know, I'm not even really sure why they turned this into a Next Generation script, because with The Child, they needed scripts because of the writer's strike, so that kind of made sense. I'm not sure why they did Devil's Due, and I'm not really sure why it took place in the fourth season.
It's not like this was a particularly fascinating episode, and I don't get the sense that they thought, you know, I've really always wanted to do that script, and, you know, now why don't we, you know, it's not like they, you know, you get the sense that somebody thought this was really cool and really wanted to see this, and
I mean, you could pretty much character for character see what, you know, what original series character would play Picard. You know, obviously it would be Kirk. You know, Data would have been Spock. Geordi would have been Scotty. I mean, you can really see this. And I don't think it's... like you said, I liked it. I don't think it's a bad episode. It's just very interesting that the show decided to be this retrograde about it. And but at the same time, I think it's good that the show is able to do a TOS style, you know, episode that is actually interesting and good. Because I think if you recall back to our first and second season discussions, the first season more than the second season, because, you know, I think the second season has gotten a bad rap and certainly isn't as good as the show is now, but was much better than the first season. You know, the first season was very much about the Next Generation doing the original series over again and doing it badly. And this is an episode where they're redoing the original series, but They're doing it
right. I mean, I will say that it was a very watchable episode. I did find the way the plot panned out to be interesting. There were some things I necessarily questioned about, you know. But that said, you know, again, it was maybe a little too simple need of a plot.
I think we expect more from the show at this point,
frankly.
Yeah, maybe
that's it. If this had been an original series episode and it did have Kirk and all of them, maybe it would have been a much better episode.
Yeah, because it's you know, like we said, we're very much, you know, if you look at our conversations, and this is getting a little meta, but I think this is probably a good episode to get meta about.
Because there's not that much to talk about.
Well, I mean, you know, with the original series, we talked about plot a lot, and we talked about allegory, and we talked about, you know, all of those things, right? Because that's what the original series was really about. That was the meat of the show. That's what the concept of the show was. If you think about what we've talked about with The Next Generation, a lot of times it's about character. It's about drama. It's about interpersonal relationships. And so this is a difficult episode to talk about, I think, because we have to think back to how we talked about the original series, frankly.
Yeah, I mean, in a lot of ways, this is The Next Generation's kind of take on religion, or at least a fear-based religion. It's the episode is very literally about fear of the devil in a lot of ways, and, you know, suggesting that, you know, humanity's accomplishments were accomplished by humanity, and, you know, that's not a tautology. I mean, this episode essentially says that, you know, divinity didn't really have that much to do with it. It may have inspired, you know, people to do things, and it may have been but ultimately it was people doing things themselves and figuring things out themselves. And I mean, this is a very not uncommon sci-fi trope, but at a certain point you kind of outgrow religion, it suggests.
Yeah, well, this, I mean...
Which is not something that I think the show necessarily believes in.
I think that's an interesting... explain that a little
more. Well, I mean, I'm just even simply thinking about the last episode mentioning... Day-to-Day mentioning that, you know, it was the Hindu Festival of Lights and stuff like that. Like, you get the sense that there is... You know, that's been kind of one of the only references to religion in that sense. I mean, this is not Babylon 5 where it's, you know, gone into a lot, but I don't know. You get this, you know, and other species are seen having religious practices. We see the Vulcans, we see the Klingons. I mean, you get the sense that
I would hesitate to say that the Vulcans or the Klingons have religious practices. I think
they don't have theological practices, but it does seem to have a kind of ritualized sense. I mean,
sure, but
religious in a non-theological sense.
I think that using the term religion, to describe something that doesn't have a belief in some sort of divinity or divine being is problematic. But,
well, I mean, do you call Zen a religion? Do you call Buddhism a religion?
No, I don't.
Okay, that's fair.
I think Buddhism is a philosophy. I don't think Buddhism is a religion.
It's kind of that's not an unfair assumption. It does hit a gray area in some ways because it is concerned with the nature of the divine and the, you know, and all of that. But that said, it's not. Anyway, the point is this is a universe which does have spiritual, I think we can agree on, practices.
I think that Star Trek in general, if you think back to the way the show and the franchise has developed, does not have a charitable view of Judeo-Christianity. I don't think that the show has ever really made any strong statements about it one way or the other, except for perhaps Bread and Circuses, but that was even a little, you know, too on the nose. And, you know, if you look at The Next Generation as the United Nations version of Star Trek, which is what it kind of is, you know, this is the era of multiculturalism, as we've said, and all of these kinds of things. This is in a very different cultural context than the original series was, certainly. That all of the other stuff, you know, the Hindu stuff and whatever else they've mentioned throughout The Next Generation, and they haven't really mentioned that much about Earth religions at all, is part and parcel of non-Western sort of things, right? And so I think The Next Generation in a lot of ways is the show that is sort of trying to not make it so much about sort of a Western interpretation of what space travel would be like. I mean, if you look at the original series, it's very much a show about, you know, gunboat diplomacy, and this is America in space. Whereas the Next Generation very much kind of goes back from that.
Which
is Earth, right? Yeah. Exactly. So,
okay.
I think in a similar sense, what you see in this episode is Ventax 2 is a society which made a literal deal with the devil, which again is something that is, you know, that's more of an original series concept than a Next Generation concept. I think that the concept behind the episode is perhaps too simplistic for the Next Generation.
Yeah.
And it's
at once simplistic and it's convoluted. I mean, because what we're basically told is this woman is a con man who goes from, you know, planet to planet, and she just happens to read in advance that, you know, oh, next month is the 1,000th anniversary of, you know, this event, and I can use my technology to, you know. See, what would have been really interesting for the episode is if this devil figure actually did come.
Well, I think,
and then
you know,
you had both of them, you know, claiming to be.
I think that probably would have been a little too much for even this universe.
Oh, I think it would have been fun.
I just don't think that would fit into the universe as constructed. But it's making me think that perhaps Ardra should have been a descendant of, say, I don't know, Harry Mudd. That would have been interesting.
Because she is a Harry Mudd type.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. I think it's a little unbelievable that you would have this con woman out there just conning planets left and right. The Federation would have no idea what the hell's going on. It all seems very, very 23rd century Star Trek and not 24th century Star Trek.
It seems like, yeah, or 1960s television and not 1990s television.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, if you look at what the planet of Ventax 2 is like, you know, they made this literal deal with the devil and then suddenly everything was fine.
I have all these questions like what exactly did she mean by eternal servitude? Like, I mean, is she going to turn it into like whipping and chains, or is it just like a go about your business and give me money every couple of years? Like, because if it's something like that and, you know, but otherwise the planet's living in peace, I don't think it's that bad. Like, you know, you have to. What exactly did she want out of this?
I would assume that she just wanted whatever she could take.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Which probably wouldn't have been that much, frankly, because she's one woman with a ship.
Exactly. She probably just wanted, like, a palace and, like, a lot of body servants and, like, you know, just grapes everywhere.
That could be, sure. Yeah. I think that, you know, it's...
And she wanted to rape Picard.
Yeah, that was weird.
That's and again, you can see that kind of a...
But you could see that working with Kirk, yeah, a lot more than Picard.
But with Picard, it got very threatening. I mean, in a way that's, you know, not... I mean, I think I do like that they were able to get that kind of threat on him from a female character to a male character. You know what I mean? I mean, that's a usual...
I guess.
But at the same time, that was still a... I think it was creepier than it wanted it to be.
Well, I think it was creepier than it was intended to be, precisely because Kirk was the type of character that would play along in pretty much any situation, whereas Picard very much does not play along in any situation.
And
he is someone who is always himself. He is always a Starfleet captain.
Yeah.
Even when he is on Risa trying to take a vacation, he is a Starfleet captain. And he's not someone who's going to go, all right, well, let's just go and say that you're the devil. Okay, let's see what happens here.
I mean, like,
Picard doesn't do that.
You know, here's the thing. Like, her whole saying, like, oh, you know, she's basically saying to Picard, you know, you want it. Like, you know, I'm, you know, beautiful. You know, I'm going to get. That's not on Picard's agenda. He doesn't care about that. Kirk, to a degree, would care about that. Even Riker would be tempted. There's no temptation, you know, even though in all cases, good would win out, you know, they are ultimately moral people. It's a more meaningful choice because, the temptation was there. For Picard, this is just a horrifying thing, and she becomes a little too intense. I mean, there is in no way that I believe that he was remotely interested in her. You know, he just thought of her as the enemy the entire time. And that, frankly, makes her even ineffective in a way because... She's really trying to go down this route that's the that anybody could realize is a terrible route to go on.
Yeah, but the thing is, I mean, I agree with you, but I don't think that there's really any way that anybody can get on Picard's good side. I mean, I think that Picard is a person who very much believes in logic, believes in science, you know, believes that there is a logical explanation for this. He obviously does not have a religious bone in his body. And so for him, Ardra pretending to be the devil and pretending to be very attracted to him to get on his good side, for him, he sees a woman who is a con artist and just doesn't know. He doesn't know why she's doing this and doesn't know how she's doing it, but he's annoyed by her more than anything else. And I think he's treating her as a criminal, frankly. Yeah.
Which is not inappropriate. It's just, she seems like a bad con artist for trying a stupid tactic. And she had not tried to, you know, if she had been appealing to his logic and his sense of like, look, my hands are tied. Like, they agreed to this. If she had been harping on that even more and not tried to menace him, I mean, it would have been a different thing. She just made a bad move and very early on. And it kind of, I don't think the show intended for her to make that poor of a move in a way.
I would agree. Yeah, I would agree with that. I think maybe the episode doesn't realize how bad of a move it is.
Yeah.
You know, and on that point, too, I think that the episode doesn't really realize how weird it is for the Enterprise to even be there. Because, again, this is the very original series setup. There's no real explanation given to why they're there. I mean, they make this hand-wavy explanation that some people were taken hostage. You know, there was a science crew there. What were they doing there? Like, why were they? I mean, there's no real reason why they're there. And once they're there, it's pretty quickly dispatched with.
Why are they attacking the science crew? Is it, you know?
Right. It just seems like, you know,
even if they'd had a line to the effect of like, well, you know, Ardra was displeased with technology. So, you know, and she's coming back because we let this, you know, them in, you know, or something like that would have made sense, you know. They seem to have no reason, you know, they're not a planet that likes technology, but it didn't seem that they were hostile to others using it.
Right. And then also, I think, you know, you have to look at it from the point of view of the episode seems to believe that the Ventaxians really do believe in this myth of Ardra.
Yeah.
And okay, she's coming back. So why would they suddenly freak out? I mean, you know, it's strange that that's the choice that they would make to freak out. I mean, they seem to be rioting and, you know, there's these establishing shots of the city with people running and smoke everywhere and stuff. And you're just kind of like, what exactly is going on here? I mean,
it doesn't seem like, they haven't thought about, this is a planet whose world they haven't thought about. It's one of your
It's an original series episode.
Yeah, it's one of your typical original series episode, which, you know, has all the, you know, it's a planet that's made out of one small village and everybody thinks the same.
Yes.
It's a symbolic planet.
Yeah, but you know,
which Next Generation does do, yeah.
Sure, but I also think, you know, I don't want to overstate how bad this episode is. I think it's fun. You know, if you wanted to see the characters from the Next Generation act like they're an original series episode, it's pretty good.
It's the kind of episode that's falling apart as we're talking about it. But as I watched it, it was fine. I enjoyed the hour I spent with it. You know, I kind of liked watching Ardra's to the degree. You know, it's always fun to see someone hammy on a show from time to time. You know, she was, again, she's hammy in the sense that, you know, Harry Mudd was hammy. You know, she's a very, they're very larger than life con artists.
And I was surprised it wasn't Kim Cattrall because she really sounded like Kim Cattrall, but that's a side issue.
But she was already in the Vulcan movie.
Not at this point, she wasn't.
But she was going to be in the Vulcan movie.
She was going to be, Yeah, and I think, you know, the courtroom stuff is, you know, it's all very like, okay, we've seen this before. We've seen Picard do this before, but it's fun.
And it's interesting to see now Data in the position because, you know, in Measure of a Man, he was judged by a Starfleet officer who had to remain neutral. And we see, you know, now he's in the judge position in this one and he's doing it just as well as he did.
I guess this is weird because the courtroom scene for me was the moment in the episode when I was really mentally subbing out Kirk. And I could really see this episode coming to life with Kirk doing all that stuff, you know, snapping his fingers and turning into the Klingon devil. And, you know, I think that was the moment where I was kind of like, I wish this was an original series episode because you have, you know, as much of a good and interesting relationship as Data and Picard have, it's not the same kind of dynamic that Spock and Kirk had. And you can see that Data is kind of acting like Spock in this episode and kind of getting under Picard's, trying to get under Picard's skin a little bit. That would totally have made more sense if it was Spock up there.
And I mean, Shatner would have done it even bigger. Picard is great, but he doesn't always do big. You know, Picard isn't a big character in a lot of ways. He's not an over-the-top character.
The show is, you know, it's... These are more realistic.
Yeah,
characters.
I was going to say, he doesn't go as broad, and this scene would have, frankly, been funny. I mean, this episode would have been funnier as an original series-style broad comedy episode. I mean, this is...
Right.
With, like, you know, this needed... Again, we're talking about Mud again. This needed to have the tone of Mud's Women. And it didn't.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right. I mean, the original series did comedy a lot better than The Next Generation, frankly.
Yeah.
And I don't think that The Next Generation has done comedy that well so far. I don't think that Star Trek post-original series does comedy all that well. So you have a lot of terrible comedy to look forward to.
Oh, God. More Joe Piscopo.
I guess that's it. I don't know that there's really all that much else to say about Devil's Due.
This episode gets 5 years of prosperity.
Yeah, it's average. I'll give it a 5 as well. Let's move on to... Clues, which is very much a Next Generation episode.
This is a weird episode.
Well,
I liked it, I think, but I also didn't like it, I think.
Okay.
You
have to explain yourself.
Well, I mean, I liked the... There was a lot in it. See, this entire... Because in terms of how the mystery is constructed, how they solve it, all of that is wonderful. Like, the actual plot of the episode is the structure of it. I liked it very much.
Sure.
You know, it is a genuine mystery. You have all these tiny, tiny things that aren't adding up that it does take a while. And, you know, I did, you know, while towards the end you figure out kind of the more broad strokes, you know, it does keep you guessing throughout. That said, Picard's decision to accept this memory wipe and all seems strange. And I don't know if it makes sense or not, but it was one that didn't quite sit well with me. Not in a way that made me think poorly of the episode.
Okay.
But, I mean, this was an unsettling episode in a lot of ways.
Well, yeah, I can see that. And I think that on the whole, there definitely are portions of the episode that are creepy.
Supposed to be. I mean, these people are realizing that an entire day's worth of events happened that they can't remember, and anything could have happened, and Data might not be able to be trusted. I mean, this is not the first time that Data has done something weird, and I mean, they immediately begin to think, you know, oh, well, it's Data. He's compromised in some way, you know, maybe, you know, and so... But they don't know what he's up to, and, you know, they begin to find more and more that, no, he is acting of his own volition in a way.
Well, I think there's a couple of things going on there. I think, number one, I'm glad you mentioned the stuff about Data being compromised, because, of course, this is post-Brothers, and that happened. So they have direct experience with Data becoming under the control of an entity which they don't know about, and they don't know what's happening. And as we saw, Data is very easily able to completely lock them out of the ship. He doesn't do that in this episode. And so I think that's number one, right? Like, whatever he's doing... because he wants to protect them, I think. And they kind of get that, and they kind of don't get that at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, Picard says, you know, I believe he's acting in the best interest of the ship. Like, when he makes it clear to, you know, Data, like, look, if you're persisting in this, I have no choice but to court-martial you, and this is what's going to happen if you're court-martialed. You're essentially going to be dissected, you know? And still Data doing that, you know, he realizes, no, he is acting for a good reason. I mean... It is their trust in Data which, you know, makes them search kind of this hard for it in a way.
Yeah.
I mean, because if they had just been willing to court-martial Data, they would go their own way afterwards. They would probably not go back to the planet. You know, he says, you know, we need to go back to this planet, even though it's probably a bad idea, realizing the reasons behind Data's actions. And trusting Data, again, is kind of more important than that.
Well, in a way, you know, it's funny that you say that, because I really think that if you look at the episode from the point of view of this is all about Data and this is all about what Data is doing and sort of the clues that are left behind that cause them to realize that something happened, you know, Picard is saying, well, look, if you continue doing this, like you said, he's going to be court-martialed and stripped down to his wires. And so them going back, you know, Data's obstinacy and Data following Picard's orders, the past Picard, not the current Picard. And that's also interesting because it's kind of like, can you really order someone to do something even though you may try and not tell them to do it? And you know, it's like weird.
Yeah.
It's that whole thing like, whatever you do, don't let me eat that piece of cake in the fridge. And then,
I was just kidding. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's that kind of thing. That what you see here is Data's obstinacy is the cause of them getting back into the situation. And so it's almost as though, like, if Data just went, Picard, you know what? This is what happened. Like, if I tell you what happened, you can't tell anyone else. And that probably would have been the end of the episode. I think Picard would have gone, oh, all right. Well, fine. Let's not go back. Like, and it would have been okay. But
that could have even, I mean, see where I thought that they would go with it was something more to that end, or like, how do we quarantine this planet forever? Like, the Federation could have put a big, you know, this has the worst plague ever and you'll die. They've done that.
Well, they do that at the end of the episode. I mean, Picard says send out a hazard or something, you know, where he does that.
Yeah.
So I think that happens. I think it's interesting he didn't do it in the first place.
Yeah.
So in that sense, I think it's interesting. I also think that, you know, if you look at the way that Data is acting throughout the episode, you know, he's making them more suspicious, not less. And it kind of feels a little strange that I don't think that it feels strange that Picard would agree to this, because Picard is very logical above all else. I think he's probably one of the more logical and less emotional characters that we've seen in Star Trek who isn't a Vulcan. And we've seen that his capabilities as a captain come from that. They mm-hmm. come from a different place than Kirk, for instance. You know, talk about the original series, that he would be okay with this. And I think that because he's okay with this, everyone would be okay with it. And at the end of the day, he respects this species' right to be xenophobic, as weird as that sounds.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's interesting. This is an interesting species because they are at once xenophobic and respectful in a way of other species. I mean, they, you know, what they do is someone comes back, they essentially just knock him out and tow them away, and they go on. You know, they don't. They can we have the assumption that they could very easily destroy any ship in that comes to in their space, and that they don't. And I think that's important. I think that's maybe part of why they're allowed, you know, kind of to stay, you know, doing what they do, because
yeah. And I don't think that xenophobia, I mean, that's the episode's word, that's not my word for what they're doing, is perhaps not the right word, because yeah, maybe they, I don't know. It's more isolationism than xenophobia. They do seem to have I mean, they even say as much. They say, look, you're an interesting species. You deserve a second chance. I don't think that they've ever said that before. That's kind of the implication, right?
But of course, they've never been in this situation before is the other implication, you know?
But is that really xenophobia? I mean, if they can be admiring of another species, they're not xenophobic, really. I don't know.
I think there's plenty of real life examples of people who are very racist but can still, you know, or xenophobic, but can still admire another nation's, you know, art, for example.
Maybe.
Or, you know, I hate all the people from this country, but they make a really good chicken dish, you know?
Yeah, but America's xenophobic and America is not isolationist. I'll just say that.
Yeah.
I mean, these are two different things, and I don't think the episode, you know, does.
Yeah,
enough.
I guess, no, it is more isolationist than xenophobic. They may just say, you know, we really, you know, we don't want to get involved in it. We're a peace-loving species, you know. If we ally with one species, we're going to have to eventually get dragged into war. You know, they may just be the ultimate Switzerland, but they've decided, you know, instead of being open to everybody, they're just going to be closed to everybody, and we don't even want you to think we exist. Like, just leave us alone. We're doing our own, you know, they basically are doing their own thing, and they don't really care what's going on out in the rest of the galaxy. They're fine.
And I think it's another example of an alien species not trusting the Federation, not knowing that the Federation is different, frankly.
Well, how could they know? I mean, they've
They've
not got I think, you know, different than any of the other species who've heard of the, you know, who don't trust the Federation but have heard of them. I mean, it's interesting that they've never heard of the Federation, we assume, and yet they, you know, very quickly go based on the evidence and take the Federation at their word, and they, you know, they intend to. They don't really have, they are going with the blank slate in a way. Many of the species who don't trust the Federation, I mean, may have seen the dark side of the Federation already going on in the world, or may have reasons to trust. They have neither reason to trust nor mistrust Picard.
Well, I think that, you know, the difference here is that Data is the X factor, right? And so,
yes.
So they've never had the situation where they were woken up. And so what we see in this episode is the Paxons, which is kind of I don't know, a hilarious name.
Gonna say, I mean, I also go with it, Pax meaning peace. I mean, that's a...
Yeah, it could be. I don't know.
The series is rarely... I mean, this is a franchise that's had the Katchians.
Yeah, all right. I mean, Star Trek can be a little silly sometimes.
I think it's one of their on-the-nose species names.
That could be, yeah. That, you know, they probably have had Romulan ships, Klingon ships, you know, Ferengi ships, Pak-led ships, all kinds of ships just wandering into their space, and they're able to knock them all out. They send them on their way, and they never know what happened. The X factor here, of course, is Data. Data's able to quickly ascertain what happened. He wakes them up, and then they're faced with a different situation. And so, you know, you see the alien saying, well, all right, you're awake. We have to destroy you. And instead, Picard comes up with this admittedly convoluted and kind of insane plan to erase their memories and pretend that it happened.
And I mean, why did they even have to say it was 30 seconds? I mean, they could say you're unconscious for a day. And that probably would have just solved so many problems.
Well, I thought about that. And the only reason I thought that maybe they didn't go down that road is maybe that would have been hard for them to believe. I mean, you know, maybe, you know, for Data to say, well, you were knocked out and I couldn't wake you up. I mean, that seems a little strange. You know, for me, it's like, okay,
or even a few hours, maybe. I don't know.
Well, once you go down the road of having to, you know, change the ship's chronometer and all that kind of stuff, you may as well just make it as short a time as possible, because otherwise, you know, you may as well, because it's going to become unbelievable if you start saying, well, you were out for 19 hours, you were out for 17 hours, you know, whatever it is, right? And then you have that whole thing about, if we were out for a day, why didn't our beards grow? You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, and again, it is really these very... You get the sense that if Crusher had not seen the mold growing, you know, that, I mean, that's really the first clue and the one that makes them pay attention to all the others, because that's the irrefutable one. I mean, they could, you know, even everything with the ship's chronometer, they could just find these anomalies as far as malfunctions, but they go so deep because Crusher is insisting on this one thing that's impossible.
But that, I mean, yeah, but that's the show's point, and that's Picard's point.
Oh, yeah.
That mysteries are formed by people finding clues, and you find one clue, and then you find another, and another, and another, and you keep looking for them until you go, what the hell is going on?
And you see, almost maybe, I almost wonder if the episode would have gone, maybe if the episode was a little more clever, it would have gone as in, you know, he makes the thing, okay, we're going to bury the clues, and you know, the... Paxian and say, like, look, this is the third time, you know, this is the fourth time you've done this, you know, they're keep popping up clues, you know, and maybe they go at the, well, you can't have a mystery forever. We do have a species that, you know, is determined to, you know, I don't know, maybe I thought that was where they were going to go with it.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, it could be, but I think that you have to kind of go on the assumption that the Paxians are not going to have that much patience, frankly, you know, and they're going to be, well, this happened the second time, you guys fail, you know. And I think it's interesting, the show also ends with them just flying away, and the assumption, of course, is that everything is fine. You know, I don't know. I mean, what does that say about the tenacity of humans? I mean, it seems incidental, for example, that you know, Guinan's in the episode because she doesn't really have anything to do. It's just a fun reason for Whoopi Goldberg to dress up in 1940s clothes, the same way that Gates McFadden was able to in the first season. But
I'm really fascinated with the idea of holodeck clothes, by the way. Like, I've been thinking about this very seriously. And
well, they're not hologram. The clothes are not hologram.
So what I think, they must have like some kind of replicator blueprint, basically, that comes with each program, and that, you know, it prints it out in your quarters, I assume.
Yeah.
And so you probably have your choice of clothes for each program. So, I mean, they probably have like some kind of in-app purchase, like of hats and things like that.
Sure. Yeah.
Like this is, you know, I really just maybe this is just because I know a little bit about the mobile game market, but I mean, people spend so long making their avatars in games these days and, you know, you're not even wearing the outfit. Like, but it's sad that Guinan doesn't seem to enjoy it. She doesn't seem to like playing dress up even. And she looks great in that outfit. I loved her hat.
Whoopi Goldberg has great legs. I mean, let's just say that. Mm. No, yeah. And I think, you know, obviously the beginning of the episode is the Next Generation style. You know, let's have something happen,
yeah,
which sets up the kind of symbolism of the entire episode kind of thing, which is something that is kind of out of favor now. But
I think it to a degree because, I mean, in practical terms, it's a fine cold open. You can miss the first 5 minutes. It uses the hall again. This is the way I like the holodeck used, as in it's some brief scene setting, but you don't have, you know, somebody trying to go into the real ship and take over, or you don't have they're trapped in the holodeck, you know.
Right.
They know that they're not really threatened by this gun.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, I think that I've made this point before, but as the show has gotten better, they've relied on the holodeck a lot less.
Yes.
And, you know, the last real holodeck episode we had was way back, you know, in the third season, Hollow Pursuits, the first appearance of Barkley. First appearance of Barkley. Look forward to a second appearance. That's not an episode that's about the holodeck malfunctioning. And this is not an episode about the holodeck malfunctioning.
Because that's not interesting.
But, you know, it's also kind of a nice, you know, this episode, again, is kind of similar to Devil's Due in that it has no B plot and it's not really about characters. You know, why doesn't it feel like an original series episode? Well, probably because it's not as on the nose. It's not, you know, all of these kind of things.
It doesn't. It isn't any particular character's episode either.
No, it's not. I mean,
it's mostly Data because he follows the episode. It's mostly Picard because he's the captain and investigating it. But it's not a Picard episode. It's not
Data. Data is the main character of this episode, and as much as anybody is, just because Data appears in the show the most, I think. But it's not about Data.
Yeah.
It's not really about Picard. It's not really about anybody. I think if you can make it about anybody, it's about the Enterprise.
It's about the mystery.
It's about the mystery, and it's also about sort of their relationship with each other, because I don't think this episode would have worked if you didn't have 3.5 seasons to build on these relationships. You know, and frankly, everybody wants to trust Data. Everybody wants to believe him. But when they're confronted with all this evidence, they have to follow their gut, which is what Picard is kind of saying with the whole clues business, and go after him.
I mean, I think Geordi's the most interesting character in this episode, surprisingly enough, because he's the one who, I mean, he's in the position to find out, you know, what most of these clues mean, or that there are these discrepancies. I mean, although it's Crusher who finds kind of the first one, everything else is technical in nature. You know, when someone has to scan Data, it's Geordi. So, I mean, and when he finds out the information about, you know, he basically used stock footage of another planet, you know, it is Geordi who finds this. And I like how he's really torn between, you know, finding the truth and his loyalty to his friend. And I mean, he keeps basically begging, you know, Data, you know, look, if there's something you have to tell me, we got to figure this out. We'll figure this out, you know, we'll deal with this. But, you know, that said, my loyalty to Starfleet is, you know, kind of the more pressing thing. You know, he has to look at the well-being of the crew.
Yeah, and I think that that's nice, and I think the show doesn't get a lot of credit for doing the sort of understated character work that I'm finding it to be doing. You know, none of this is very obvious. I mean, certainly, you know, people like to sort of make fun of the Next Generation for being a little too on the nose sometimes with the symbolism and setting up episodes and things like that. But I think a lot of the character work is really strong. I think that's where the show really excels. And, you know, they don't make a point of beating you over the head with the fact that Geordi and Data are friends. They don't beat you over the head with the fact that Picard and Data have this really strong connection. You know, they don't beat you over the head with the fact that, you know, Beverly Crusher has no personality. You know, all of these things. And frankly, I think it's interesting that the episode revolves around them at a time when they're able to sort of indulge in their hobbies more too.
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, the very first scene of the episode is Worf leading a
like Tai Chi class of,
you know, Klingon Tai Chi. And, you know, we find out that Crusher likes ethnobotany and all these kind of things. And
yeah. And like Picard would, I mean, I think it's interesting that, you know, we know that he hangs out in the Dixon Hill game all the time. You know, that's kind of one of his go-tos.
Also, but... now he's trying a cool 1940s accent and succeeding, sort of.
Well, then, you know, the more he gets into character, the more he plays. But I think it's funny that he thinks it's important that Guinan does, you know, plays with him today, you know.
Yeah.
He, you know, that he wants to... I mean, again, their his relationship with Guinan, it's implied that they've had, you know, they have, if not the closest relationship, they do have a very deep relationship.
Yeah.
And that whenever, they, you know, they do have complete trust, they do like each other very much, they do have an extremely deep connection. And I think it's nice that you see them, you know, okay, well, now that I have some time off, you know, that's who he wants to hang out with.
Right.
And he wants to show her what he likes to do.
Yeah, I think that's kind
and
of
she,
it.
And she hates it.
Well, it's an episode about people doing what they want to do, and at the end of the day, they don't get to do what they want to do because they're all knocked out, and they have to run around like chickens with their head cut off and figure out how to make the ship appear that it was only out of, you know, out of time for 30 seconds.
Now, here's the thing. Like, do they still have an extra day of shore leave, or is that, like, that gone now?
I guess it must be gone.
I mean, they you wouldn't think that they would, you know... You would think that at some point, like, Starfleet would say, like, yuck, you've been on shore leave for an extra day than you've been, you know, you're supposed to have been. And he's like, what do you mean? We were only unconscious for 30 seconds. And then they figure it out. Like,
well, that is the one weird thing about the episode, is that they don't ever really go into the fact that the wormhole threw them through time as well as space. That seems kind of important. It's kind of important. They say
it was a day's journey. Like they said, it was about a day from where we originally were. But
yeah,
then,
but
they, I think the implication is that they're using a day in terms of distance. Like, you know,
no, it was supposed to, I mean, I think it was supposed to be a day. Well, no, because where, how else would they have reset the ship's chronometer? It's like, if the ship was off by that much, then they would know that a day had passed and suddenly everything would seem weird again. They have to be able to say, well, it actually threw us a day in the future as well, even though we were out, you know, perceptually for 30 seconds.
But the first thing that Data says is, oh, I'm going to reset the ship's chronometer, you know?
Right. He has to link it up with the Federation time buoys that are out there.
Yeah. And I think before they kind of checked the date, you know, the implication was he fixed it before they were able to, like, check that it was a day. So, and he fixed the day of it at that same point.
That doesn't make any sense.
Listen, this much of this
if I get knocked out on July 2nd and I wake up and you tell me I've only been sleeping for 30 seconds and I look at the weather and it says it's July 3rd, I'm going to be confused.
Yeah, but I've gone to the weather and I've changed it already.
All I'm saying is that this is not very well, that's the part of the episode that's not very well thought out.
Yes, of course. There are some things, again, the exact physical what he did and how he altered everything makes no sense. They didn't think about this.
On the whole, though, I think it's fun. I think it's another example for the entire crew to work together, and it's fun to see these people solve a mystery.
These two episodes were kind of trifles in their own way.
Yeah, I think so, but I don't think they're bad. And no. I think it's good that at this point in the show's run, they're able to just turn out a couple of solid, if not
these are two good
fantastic episodes.
These are two good filler episodes.
Yeah, and I mean, when you're doing 26 episodes a season, you're going to have some like this.
So this episode would get 8 seconds of missing time.
Okay, I will give it 6.
Okay.
Well, next week we are on the downward slope into the fourth season already, if you can believe it, with First Contact and Galaxy's Child, which is a direct follow-up to a previous episode of the show.
The Child?
Which one is it?
The Child.
Not that one.
Oh.
Out. You know,